Hi everybody, welcome to this episode of Enlightenment Today. I'm Jason. In this episode, we are going to speak about the monarchical view of the universe. Now, what do I mean by the monarchical view of the universe? The monarchical view is a political analogy of the universe, where God is a ruler, a leader, a lord, or more to the point, a dictator. This way of thinking is an entrenched way of thinking that is applied to families, friendships, governments, societies, religions, business, the universe, and even reality itself. This way of thinking makes us feel subservient to the world and other people. It makes us feel worthless, and self-worth issues are big in the world today. As a result, woven into the fabric of society and culture is this yearning to be in a kingly position above everybody else. We base this on the idea that monarchical systems are intrinsic to the nature of reality, but nothing could be further from the truth. There is no king in nature because nature is a holistic system. And just in case you forgot, we are nature as well. Now, to understand why we all subtly think in this way, we have to explore the history of the monarchical view and why it came about. When we look at pre-agrarian cultures, humanity lived in and with nature. We lived in small tribes and only needed the necessities of life. They didn't need to seek harmony with nature like we do in the modern world, for the obvious fact that they were naturally harmonious. Nature was an extension of themselves. So acquiring material possessions, and more to the point, consumerism, meant nothing to them. What was most important to them was the welfare of the individual and the community. But don't get me wrong, those small ancient tribes definitely did have their own dramas, just not to the magnitude that we have today. For them, an individual's problems were the community's problems and vice versa. So the welfare of one is the welfare of all. Tribal cultures are traditionally a partnership society based on mutuality. Not all tribes were like this, but this is a tribe's traditional foundation. And if an individual wanted salvation from the group, then they were met by nature's wrath. Individual self-interest and selfishness disturbed the group. Individuality to them was how one benefited the group. Everybody had their place within the community by following their natural gifts and talents. No one had to be assigned duties, as there was no dictator. In the Taoist philosophy of China, each and every individual has his or her own unique psychosomatic pattern that they express either physically or psychologically, which ultimately brings harmony to the world. In Chinese, this unique organic pattern is known as Li. This is also a famous concept in Neo-Confucianism, popular in ancient Korea. Now, by following your own unique Li, you naturally harmonize with the universal essence and order, the Tao, which brings harmony to the world. This is the concept of Yin in Chinese, which means mutual resonance or interdependence. When we moved into agrarian societies, Taoist sages tried to bring these natural values of the harmony between individual and community into the new world. In ancient times, they recognized that the community is an extension of the individual, and so the individual is the community. In traditional Chinese medicine, they explained this by saying that the small picture and the big picture are the same picture, meaning that the world is a reflection of what is happening in the inner life of the individual. But once small tribes merged into larger communities, following our natural gifts and talents was replaced slowly by assigned duties. Don't get me wrong, there is nothing inherently wrong with this transition, as this transition was necessary for us to get where we are today in this very moment. Though the problem those ancient cultures had is that to maintain their new social structure and agriculture forced individuals to give their innate power away and instead conform to the functional needs of the society. This is something still with us today on a deeper and much larger scale. As a result, our creative calling, was suppressed in favor of money obtained for labor. This supplied them the means to purchase food, clothing, and shelter, which was once their birthright, but now turned into a commodity. These are still our birthright, but we believe they are something we should acquire. This whole process of moving into society from nature slowly made us support the machinery of the new society over our own humanity. The result of this transition was we lost our sense of responsibility because society and culture took over our responsibility in the role of a parental figure. What we were unaware of is that a lack of responsibility leads to passive conformity. And I don't mean in the sense of an authentic humility, but rather a docile passivity, much the same as a zombie we see depicted in films. When society and culture are not in accord with the individual mind, the individual unknowingly, in most cases, takes on the function of society and culture, where we begin to mimic a machine rather than our spontaneous humane nature. This machine-like behavior is so ingrained that we never question its origins and authenticity. We stupidly relinquish our power away to an unnatural machine. This is the crucifixion of the individual and the sacrifice we all suffer. We crucify ourselves to the social order. This crucifixion is most vivid when we look at the Hindu caste system and the medieval Western Christian society under the feudal system. So when settled agrarian culture is born, a township is built to protect the people from outside influences and threats, such as a hungry lion and so forth and so on. And on top of this, a mental framework is created for people to follow, which includes strict rules and regulations that we should abide by. A division of labor and a division of function is the result. A great example of this, as I mentioned, is the ancient Hindu caste system, going way back to the Vedic civilization. It is made up of the four castes, the Brahmins, which is the priesthood and scholarly class, the Kshatriyas, which is the nobility and warrior class, the Vaishyas, which is the merchants and farmers class, and the Shudras, which is the laborers and peasants class. So you are born into your caste according to your lineage, and you don't have any say about it. A direct reflection of this is the caste system under the medieval Christian society, under the feudal system. In this system, we have the priesthood of the church, the feudal lords and royalty of nobility, the farmers and merchants of the commons, and the serfs who were the slaves. Though you may not believe it, but this pattern is still with us today, because when we are born into this world, we come out of nature from our parents and are taught to submit to a caste and rule of society and culture. And I mean this pattern is all over the world now. Keep in mind though that there are spiritual benefits of a system like the Hindu caste system, because when you are born into a caste, you are supposed to give yourself fully to that caste, which is the crucifixion of your ego to the society. So being born into whatever caste you are born in is determined by God's will, according to the ancient Hindu beliefs. This process reduces self-interest and makes one more humble. Another thing is that there is a stark difference between the social systems of the ancient Hindus and the Christians. And that is once a Hindu has fulfilled their duties in society, they are allowed to break away from caste and become a sage in the forest, which is known as a vanaprastha in Sanskrit. This is also thought of as the resurrection of the individual who has crucified themselves to the society from birth. So from the inception of agrarian culture until now, society and culture dictate life towards the individual, creating a subtle psychosis where we tiptoe our whole life trying to not disturb the social machine from ticking. When we look at the Hindu caste system, it is not too far-fetched to assume that the whole system was created by the top two classes of the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas. Their position of power made the average individual feel subordinate to the higher classes. As a result, we developed this view of life which is governed from above. This view is completely different to pre-agrarian cultures. The governing from above view of life, the monarchical view, infiltrated all aspects of society, culture, and religion, especially religion. Now, religions were quick to adopt the monarchical view. Maybe they were even the origins of such thinking. Our spirituality coming out of nature was turned into a tool of indoctrinated belief to rule the population. Sigmund Freud even believed that the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten was the pioneer of a monotheistic religion that spawned the concept of the universe being governed from above. He believed that Moses was a follower of this religion. The ancient Persians also had a monarchical view of the universe. Darius I, who lived from 550 to 486 BCE, created the King of Kings tradition. This tradition is based on a kingly god lording it over the world. This is a political analogy of the universe that many kings and queens employed to maintain control of the masses. The result of this tradition is we began to think of God as a king above his lowly subjects. The King of Kings tradition was a foreign way of understanding the universe, and it was diametrically opposed to the thought of China, Greece, and India in that epoch of time. The great philosophers of those civilizations, most notably Lao Tzu, Pythagoras, Gautama the Buddha, and Confucius, all had a similar view, and the view of Darius I was alien and not natural. The idea of God as a king started the deep-seated belief that God punishes us for our sins, as if God is some sort of being watching it over our every move, which is just plain unintelligent. Eastern philosophy has a completely different view of the universe. The universe, according to the East, is a loving holistic system that is fundamentally one. In the Chinese classical text, the Tao Te Ching, it states, "The Tao loves and nourishes all, but does not lord it over them." In the ancient Hindu philosophy of Vedanta, they have the idea that Atman is Brahman, meaning the deep down real essence of your being is identical with the ultimate reality of the universe, the divine ground of all being. The monarchical view, on the other hand, trains us to take no responsibility for our actions because we pass everything off onto God. As a result, you know, we believe we are punished for our sins rather than admitting that we are punished by our sins. This is a completely different state of psychology and a much more healthy one. Being punished by our sins relates somewhat to karma because we reap what we sow. The monarchical view developed more in Western religions than Eastern religions, maybe because of the King of Kings tradition, which likely infiltrated Christianity. In the West, this monarchical view of the universe is tangible evidence as to why the majority of Western people, even atheists, are affected by the monarchical view. What I mean is when you ask Westerners about God, they instantly think of a creator of some sort. The West have took on God as a creator of the universe as a king, while East still has a relationship to nature. Some may say, what about Eastern creator gods like Brahma? Well, it's not that simple. When you speak of Brahma the creator, you have to talk about the other two gods of the Hindu Trimurti, Shiva and Vishnu. This trinity of gods are personified deities which represent the cosmic functions of creation, maintenance, and destruction, meaning that Brahma is the creator, Vishnu is the preserver, and Shiva is the destroyer. These can be thought of in many ways, as the process of the cosmos or the individual process, meaning the death of the ego to the ultimate reality, Brahman. Remember, Brahma and Brahman are different. The three gods are only the universal process coming from the source of all existence, which is one with you and I, Brahman. Most Eastern spiritual paths view the universe as an organism that grows without any aspect of monarchy, because monarchy is basically a human concept. These differing views are deep-seated within our consciousness. For example, a Western child will often ask, how was I made? While an Eastern child will ask, how did I grow? This fundamental difference can be attributed to the book of Genesis. In Genesis, the universe is made in the same way a carpenter builds a house. The world then is an artifact from the hands of an all-governing creator God. Remember, Jesus is the son of a carpenter and also the son of God. This is an allegory to explain this creator-created view of the universe. Alan Watts called this the ceramic model of the universe. This view assumes there is a difference between maker and made, and creator and created. We need to remember that anything created is made from the outside inward, like the way a sculptor carves wood. The universe is not made, it grows. And anything that grows in nature manifests from the inside out. Think of a flower. A flower blossoms from a simple, humble bud. The monarchical view destroys the individual's naturalness and eclipses our essence, which makes us believe we don't belong. The East intelligently explains that you are the Atman, which is Brahman. You are that. You are enlightened. But the reason you don't experience it is because you maintain patterns that no longer serve you. And one such pattern is the monarchical view of the universe. Realize that you are that simple, humble bud, awaiting to blossom into a flower. Understand your innate oneness with the universe and allow your fragrance to be experienced by all. Now, to understand more about the monarchical view of the universe, I recommend that you read my book, Enlightenment Now, which goes into this topic in depth. Thank you for watching today and see you next time. Hey everybody, thank you for watching this episode of Enlightenment Today. If you enjoyed this episode and want to see more, please subscribe to my YouTube channel right here. Also, to watch some of my previous episodes of Enlightenment Today, click down here, okay? So thank you for watching, and let's continue to learn, grow, and love more together.